Welcome back. Andy Parks live at the Washington Times, except it's Fred Grandy in for Andy this week. And once again, able to talk to a regular contributor to this program, Stephen Dynan, the political editor of the Washington Times. And Stephen, if I'm reading your article in today's Times correctly, it looks as though we've avoided jumping off the fiscal cliff in order to wade knee-deep into the fiscal swamp that is Hurricane Sandy, right? I mean, isn't that,
I wish I'd written that. That pretty much
it's yours. I'm giving it to you. But
yeah, so that's exactly right. So all of the savings that we won out of increasing taxes in the the President Obama won out of increasing taxes in the fiscal cliff deal have been more than eaten up in this year, fiscal year 2013, by the Sandy bill that's going to pass the Senate here by this evening. And if you go into the exact numbers, the Sandy, all told, we will have spent about $60 billion for this first set of Sandy. Mm-hmm. You know, there could be more coming down the road, but $60 billion. For Sandy, and in the first year, the tax increases produced about $40 billion or so.
Okay,
well, more than that is eaten up.
I'm not a mathematician, and I never played one on TV, but I tend to think that leaves us $10 million in the hole for the first year of the fiscal deal, right? It's roughly a $550 billion fiscal deal, right?
Over 10 years, right. But, you know, if in the first year, if we've already used up all that money with Hurricane Sandy, imagine what happens, you know, next year and the out years. In some ways, I sort of hate to use this because it's such a cliche, but it really is the definition of tax and spend. And Congress, of course, had an option to go a different direction. They have an option to offset the Sandy money. So they say, okay, we made all of this progress in helping the deficits and debt by passing these tax increases, which is what the president said we were trying to do. Okay, in order to preserve that, let's go ahead and find other spending cuts so that we aren't just adding another $60 billion into the deficits and debt now that we've done all this hard work of getting them down a little bit. But no, Congress, at least the House has rejected all those efforts. The Senate earlier had rejected those efforts, and this afternoon, you know, probably around 6 o'clock or so, will once again reject them and send the bill straight to the president as is.
Well, let's see now. What you're essentially saying, and I think you're terribly pessimistic about this, is that you're assuming that over the next 10 years, assuming this budget deal goes through, there'll never be another disaster that will force us to draw down on the savings. I think that's completely plausible from a member's point of view, seeing as how they only live for a one election cycle at a time. I mean, doesn't that make sense to you?
That's what you just said is exactly right. That's why I did the story. You know, Congress, it's one of these crazy things, you know, about Congress budgets in these 10-year budget windows, mm-hmm. but they really only care about the immediate year's tax rates and the immediate year's spending, which is why we go from deal to deal in 6 months and in 1 year. But the crazy part is that it allows Congress to get 10 years worth of savings and spend it all in 1 year. And then, you know, you're basically, in this case, you've got years and years and years of apparent tax increases. But if you're just looking at the immediate year, which is what Congress cares about, they raise taxes about $40 billion or so and are already adding $60 billion in new spending.
And so, by the way, a corollary to that argument, you probably picked this up because you've covered the Hill for so long, is you've probably figured out by now that members of Congress on both sides of the aisle love disasters because you can't predict them and you have to pay for them. So you automatically give yourself a buy or a waiver from any 10, 20 or 200 year spending deal that you've just put in place.
That's exactly right. And of course, the other thing that happens, and this Sandy deal shows this, is that you also go ahead and tack on a lot of spending that, in this case, of the Sandy spending, well less than half of it is going to be paid out over the next 18 months. So you're talking about probably $30 to $35 billion that isn't even spent until 2014, yet it gets tacked onto this year's budget as emergency spending. You're allowed to break all the spending caps because it's designated an emergency. That's another reason why lawmakers love emergencies, love natural disasters, because it allows them to get a lot of special projects basically in under the tent without having to go look for offsets. If this were put through the normal appropriations process, as all of that out-year spending, some people think all of that out out your spending should, the stuff that happens 3-4 years down the road, which is clearly not an emergency need, if that were put through the regular appropriations process, it would have to compete with everything else, and you would have to make changes and trade-offs and balance it. But this time you don't have to.
The normal spending process, and I'm sure you're aware, is about as up-to-date as the rotary phone. Okay, when was the last time you saw a normal spending process covering the Hill?
I actually don't think I've ever seen one. I'm told the last time was 1997, which is about 3 years before I started covering. So.
Well, okay. Well, all right. Well, then let's turn from the fiscal cliff to the immigration precipice, because as you know, you've got a deal in the offing now. You've got 4 Republican senators, 4 Democratic senators coming up with a new grand framework for immigration reform. I've got your piece in front of me, and the first thing that stopped me was in paragraph 4. The senator's plan would grant immediate legal probationary status to most illegal immigrants. Is a translation for that temporary amnesty?
You might be able to drop the word temporary and just stick with the word amnesty.
All right.
To be honest,
all right. So
you know, those folks who think that giving illegal immigrants legal status here, essentially giving them what they broke the law to get, is amnesty. This is an amnesty bill for those folks. The 8 senators who worked on this framework will say no, it's not an amnesty because we require them to go through background checks, we require them to go through probationary status. But you know, if the definition of amnesty is giving these folks what they broke the law to get, then I think it's safe to say that they are getting amnesty. Now, whether that's good or bad can be debated, but you know, it will be fair for many folks to call this an amnesty.
Okay, well then let me finish your sentence here because I only read half of it. The last part of the sentence is, but this would delay them giving a full path to citizenship until the country's borders are deemed more secure, which I underlined and then wrote in the margin, how in the hell do you measure that?
Well, you know, that's sort of funny. One of the things that we're dealing with here is it's a 5-page framework. Last time there was an immigration bill, I believe it was 500, 600 pages long. So we have 5 pages that will eventually turn into hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of legislation. The framework doesn't say how it gets decided, and that will be one of the key things is how they decide that. There are all sorts of things that are crazy difficult to understand about this, and that will be very difficult going forward. And I guess that's probably important to stress is that a framework does not mean a bill.
Oh, no.
And a framework is going to be really tough to end up writing a bill. You put your finger on one of those things that can be tough to write the specifics on. Another thing is that this bill goes, or the framework says that we will have a guest worker program, but those guest workers will also have a path to citizenship, which means it's not really a guest worker program. It's just a straight increase in legal immigration. How they end up writing those details and how they write the details about what new workers will be allowed and what the economic conditions are, that will be brutal. How they write the provisions about background checks, putting this into legislation is still very difficult. So there's a lot of excitement on the part of immigration rights advocates and some Republicans and a lot of Democrats that they think they have momentum for this. I'd just caution that writing an actual piece of legislation is going to be very difficult.
Well,
today may be the high water.
That's probably why they're coming out with a framework now, because they probably know that the framework is as far as they're going to get. One other piece we haven't discussed, we've just got a few seconds left, but I did want to touch on this. You're saying current restrictions preventing non-immigrants from accessing federal benefits, public benefits, will also apply to lawful probationary immigrants. So if I understand that, if this new deal were in place and you became a lawful probationary immigrant, you would lose your benefits, the roughly $90 million in Medicaid that goes to illegals now, you'd give up? Who's going to sign up for that?
I hadn't even begun to think about those folks who are illegally getting it right now.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. Those are some of the things they'll have to work out. Essentially, what it means is it's supposed to mean that you won't get access to the president's health care, you won't get access to food stamps, but as you say, given that some people already do get that access, there are a lot of problems that are going to have to be worked out as they write this legislation.
Well, Steve, keep us posted, but I guess I would have to conclude that right now, if I were an illegal looking at this, I would say, sure, I'm illegal, but I still have rights, and you're trying to take them away.
We'll stay on that. It's a really interesting thing.
Thanks, Stephen. We'll be right back.